religion in its contemporary context. How do we know? This morning, Professor John McMurray gives the first of two talks on religious experience. He's called this one, What Religion Is About.
This week and next, I am to talk to you about religious experience. This must mean Christian experience, since I possess no other. And one must have an experience before one can talk properly about it. In this wide field, it is easy to get lost, usually by asking the wrong questions. I want to help you, if I can, to start off on the right foot. For many people, in discussing religion, get off on the wrong one, soon find themselves tangled in a maze of words, and come to the conclusion that the whole thing is a lot of nonsense. Now, I am satisfied, for more reasons than I can offer you here, that our first question should be, what is religion about? In this talk, I shall explain what this question means and suggest an answer. And though our special subject is religious experience, it will be helpful, I think, to start with experience in general. There are two kinds of experience which we have to distinguish. The first I call direct, and the second reflective. Direct experience is what comes to us as we live our ordinary lives in the world, in its original freshness. It is what is given to us without being thought over or interpreted in any deliberate way. Much of it comes by way of our senses, like tasting a strawberry. It includes all that we see and hear and handle. Watching a hawk, for instance, or meeting a stranger. But it includes also our direct reactions to these. Some things bore us, others frighten us or make us angry. Some attract and others repel us. These intuitive reactions of ours are also part of our direct experience. And so is the quick notice we take of people, including ourselves, and our immediate unreflecting reactions to them. Reflective experience, which includes religious experience, is indirect. It is the result of stopping to think or to brood over elements in our direct experience, trying to interpret or understand, to judge or appreciate what is directly given to us. Our reflective experience, we might say, is what we make of our direct experience. So, all our reflective experience is about our direct experience. It was in this sense that I asked, what is religion about? Most of our reflective experience remains tied to the particular direct experience which it is about. I remember when I was a boy looking through a hole in a hedge and seeing a rabbit asleep at the foot of a wall with a round black spot on its side. The spot intrigued me, so I crept along the far side of the wall till I came to where the rabbit was, and cautiously raised my head and looked over. It wasn't a rabbit at all. It was an old piece of wood, and the spot was a hole filled with shadow. I stood for a little, wondering what had made me take it for a rabbit. But soon this reflection died away, as other things caught my interest, and I went on my way. Years later, when I was engaged in a systematic study of vision, I remembered this incident, but in a way that posed a number of difficult questions. Did I really see a rabbit, though only a piece of wood was there? Or did I really see a piece of wood and only think it was a rabbit? Or was what I saw simply a colored shape, which I misinterpreted as a rabbit? Or to generalize the problem, whenever I see anything, is what I see just a colored shape which I have to interpret, and which I may on occasion misinterpret? If so, what is this business of interpreting, and how do I do it? All this is systematic, reflective experience of quite a high level of intellectual effort, in this case, philosophical. You might perhaps like to have a shot at answering these questions. I brought them in, however, only to illustrate the difference between ordinary and systematic reflection. I wanted to draw your attention to the three great fields of systematic and persistent reflection: the sciences, the arts, and religion. Of these three, religion is the oldest, the most inclusive, and the most universal. Suppose now that we ask, what is science about? We find that the question is unsatisfactory, for there are so many different sciences, each of them dealing with a different bundle of facts. If we ask, however, what is astronomy about, the answer is simple. It is about the heavenly bodies, stars and the planets, the sun and moon, comets and nebulae. When we ask, what is biology about, the answer is about living things, plants and animals. Every science, indeed, is about a certain collection of facts to be found in our direct experience, and the science itself consists of a systematic body of reflective experience which organizes and explains the facts it is about. The same is true of the arts, though with a difference. Like the sciences, there are many of them, each dealing with a different set of direct experiences. The difference is that the mode of reflection is of another kind. It is concerned to appreciate rather than, in the usual sense, to understand. If we ask what music is about, the answer is about sounds. So painting is about form and color, light and shade. Dancing is about bodily movement, and so on. What they are about are selected aspects of the world of direct experience, which each art expresses or interprets in its own special fashion, giving us, in the result, another sort of reflective experience. I hope this will make clear what I meant by saying that our reflective experience is always about our direct experience. It arises from direct experience, makes something of it, and refers back to it. So now we can repeat our primary question about religion. We know what the sciences and the arts are about. What then is religion about? What are the elements of our direct, everyday experience from which religion arises, which it transforms in reflection, and to which it refers? There are not, however, different religions in the sense that there are different sciences or different arts. Different religions are competitors, and each is an attempt to express and to practice the one true religion. There is another point to notice before I offer you my answer. Science, art, and religion have a practical reference. They arise, mainly, from our failures in action, from the frustration and limitation of our purposes. When things go swimmingly, there is no need to think. It is when we fail that we are forced into reflection. Now, there are two obvious ways in which things may go wrong for us. We may do things the wrong way, or we may do the wrong things. The first of these errors affects the means we use. The second concerns errors in our choice of ends. In the first case, we fail to achieve our intention. In the second, we succeed, only to find that it wasn't what we really wanted, and that we should have done something else instead. For a fully successful life, then, we need two kinds of knowledge. We need to know how to do what we want to do, and we need to know how to choose properly between the possible ends we might aim at. Science arises from the first sort of failure. Consequently, the sciences provide the knowledge that enables us to correct and to extend our means of action. The arts arise from the other kind of mistake, and their function is to refine and enlarge our ability to judge wisely between the possible ends of action. You may find some of these assertions doubtful and some interesting, or even exciting. I hope you will discuss them among yourselves. But there is neither time nor need to discuss them now. What matters is the parallel question about religion. What sort of failure and frustration is it in ordinary life that gives rise to religion? The answer to this question may go far to show us what religion is about. We are apt to assume that if the end we are aiming at is satisfactory, and the means we are using are efficient means, then everything is right. When we think like this, we are assuming, and this is rarely the case, that no one else is involved. The only way to achieve a thoroughly good purpose may be to get into the nearest motor car and catch a train. But if I do this and the car belongs to someone else, I put myself in the wrong. Indeed, if we think of it, there are few things we want to do which do not involve the cooperation of other people, or at least their non-interference. Here is a third factor which may well lead to frustration and failure, our relations with one another. A student in a class on ethics once asked the lecturer, "Why can't I do as I please?" The answer he got was, "Because other people won't let you." And it is true that our lives are permeated by rules, which have become almost second nature to us, which regulate our relations with one another. There is the law, there are rules of morality, principles of courtesy, of friendship, and of good fellowship. A wit once said of courtesy that it is like a bicycle tire. There's nothing in it, but it eases the bump considerably. But that was before a failure in courtesy became, at times, a matter of life and death on our roads. Need I say more? So now I can give you my answer. It is from failure in our relations with one another and the disastrous consequences they have for our personal lives that religion arises. It is to these failures that religion refers. If this answer is the true one, and I haven't any doubt at all that it is, then we can answer our earlier question, what is religion about? Just as astronomy is about the stars, and just as biology is about living creatures, so religion is about human beings and relation. Now it is through our relations with one another that we are human beings, or shall we say persons. We need only consider the part played in human life by speech to be convinced of this. And if this is so, we might restate our conclusion in a way that may prove even more suggestive. We may say that religion is about human life in its personal character. This answer does in fact complete the task which I had assigned to my first talk with you about religious experience. I expect that some of you will find it a curious and unexpected conclusion. You will want to say, I expect, that surely religion is about God and sin and forgiveness of sin, about prayer and worship, about the church and the life after death and things of that sort. If you are thinking like this, then you have missed the point. These things are constituents of religion. And religion is not about itself, though some people seem to talk about it as if it were. Religion is reflective experience, and we saw, you may remember, that all reflective experience is about direct experience. We have been trying to discover how our major kinds of reflective experience, science, art, and religion, are each related to our direct experience of ordinary life in their different ways. We shall have to wait until next week to consider how religious reflection builds itself up in its way of handling what, in our direct experience, it is about. Let me then, in conclusion, suggest another way of expressing the point of my answer, which may prove more illuminating. Our ordinary direct experiences are matters of fact. They happen to us in one way or another. Strictly speaking, they are not the results of reflection, whether scientific or artistic or religious. But language is and ought to be flexible. We might, for instance, call an eclipse of the sun an astronomical fact, meaning no more than that it is a direct experience which concerns the astronomer and which he can explain to us. We might also perhaps, though not so easily, talk of the subject of a picture as a pictorial fact. In the same way, we might call those facts of direct experience which are in some way specially significant for religion, religious facts. If you will allow me this liberty of statement, then I shall use it to say that the primary religious fact in our everyday direct experience is the family. I should like you to think over this statement by way of preparation for what I shall have to say to you next week. Think of what you consider a family at its best, and ask yourself questions about its structure, and particularly about what holds it together. You might go on to think about the functions of the family in our lives, why we need it, what we get from it, and also what strains and stresses may arise which threaten its harmony or lower its morale, and how they can be dealt with. I should like to suggest in particular that in all your thinking on this subject, you should notice the language, both the words and the ideas, that are common to family experience and to religion.
Professor John McMurray has been giving the first of two talks on religious experience.